Hi, I'm Trevor Elio.
And I'm Julie Stern, and this is Conceptually Speaking, the show where we interview experts to uncover the concepts and patterns that help us organize our world.
From farming to fashion, we can understand any field through acquiring, organizing, and transferring conceptual relationships. We hope this podcast will inspire teachers and students to design creative solutions to complex problems and accelerate innovation in today's schools. If you're interested in our work, you can find out more at edtosavetheworld.com. Our guest today is founder and CEO of Weird Enough Productions, Tony Weaver. His comic series, The Uncommons, is Tony's creative outlet to design engrossing stories, as well as promote digital literacy and social emotional well-being. As you'll soon be able to tell, Tony has a passion for pop culture. His passion for comics, anime, and video games is what makes the content he produces at Weird Enough so compelling and familiar for kids. We have never had a guest who so clearly understands the plight and perspective of Gen Z students, their hobbies, their trends, their digital lives. And although these might be unique, Tony believes the tool teens need to navigate our complex times is one of mankind's oldest, storytelling.
I think that storytelling at its core is about having the confidence to share your experiences with the world. Mm. I think that every student, every young person is the hero of their own story. And while very often we consider storytelling as I'm going to go get my composition notebook and I'm going to write this long epic with amazing character development and bold new locations and things like that, I think that a student being able to look someone in the eye and answer the question, how are you doing today, is storytelling. I think a student being able to adequately express, here's how I feel and here's why, here's what I'm experiencing and here's how that's affecting me, here's how I feel about this and this is the reason that I feel the way that I do, I think that's storytelling. And I think that framing that as something that's heroic is really important.
If you have teens of your own, I recommend you listen to this episode with them. We'll talk TikTok, anime, Marvel, and Supreme fanny packs. But we'll also talk about the relationship between identity, social media, and digital citizenship. It's an enjoyable episode for all ages, and I think it will really spark some good dialogue. Hope you enjoy. Our guest today is storytelling entrepreneur and founder of Weird Enough Productions, Tony Weaver. Welcome, Tony.
Hey, I'm really happy to be here. Thank you all for having me.
We're happy to have you. So can you explain a little bit more about what you do at Weird Enough Productions and what you hope to accomplish through your work?
Well, I am CEO, executive director, or my formal job title is Weirdo in Chief at Weird Enough Productions. And at Weird Enough, what we do is we use superheroes and comic books for literacy and social emotional learning. I love stories, I love diverse narratives, and I love the ability of the sequential art medium to illustrate different perspectives. And at Weird Enough, what we try to do is take those unique stories and partner them with curricula and lesson plans that allow students to see themselves as heroes in their own stories.
Awesome. I love that. I've seen so many kids who usually the demographic, I'm sure, I don't know if you see this. I'm curious if you see this. Usually demographic are typically males, typically around 12, 13 years old. A teacher will come up to me and say, you know what, Julie, I can't get my own son or my own child or kids in my classroom, certain kids to read. They're excellent in math and science, but I can't get them to like reading. And so I just hand them, I can't wait to hand them some of your stuff, but I just hand them like Dog Man is just the most popular. But it is incredible how something like comic style literature or literacy just really hooks students. So that is really cool. So I thank you for your work. That sounds awesome. I love also Weird Enough. Talk to us about this, why you chose Weird Enough Productions and of course you call yourself Weirdo in Chief. I love that. Tell us about that.
So for me growing up, I was always the weird kid. So it's funny that you mentioned Dog Man, because I was and still am a huge Captain Underpants fan, and they're written by the same author. Mm-hmm. So I was a kid that was running around reading Captain Underpants books. It's like, would you like to talk about the preposterous plot of Professor Poopy Pants? Anybody? and from very early on, it became understood that, like, okay, so Tony's just that kid. Tony's the weird kid. Understood. He's really into his action figures. He's really into his trading cards. He's really into his video games. He's really into these comics. And honestly, we're going to encourage it, but he does go overboard a little bit sometimes. And I think that very often students can feel like their passions or things that they get excited about are weird if they're incongruent with what their peers are doing. So for example, when I was in second grade, Pokemon was a huge thing. All of my peers were into Pokemon. When I'm in the seventh grade and I'm still into Pokemon and can speak to you with encyclopedia level knowledge about IVs and what the most efficient team is and what builds you should have and things like that, suddenly it's weird. Suddenly it's like, I don't know how I feel about this. And the reason we selected the name Weird Enough is because the idea is that as long as you pursue your personal truth, you're never too weird. You're just weird enough. As long as you're doing what makes you happy and you're ushering your passion into the world, there's no such thing as being too weird. You can't be too yourself. You're always weird enough.
Would you say that some of those things are becoming more mainstream? I just feel like even in the last few years, the number of students that I have that, whether it's through graphic novels, it's through anime, the comic book hero movie train is continuing to rumble through. Well, I guess maybe not theaters, on-demand services everywhere.
Right.
Game of Thrones, like these things that were sort of perceived as nerdy are becoming more mainstream. And I think about myself when I was in high school, Return of the King came out in theaters, and you know, my friends were having like a big get together that night, and they're like, dude, like, why can't you come? And I was like, I have too much homework. And I was sneaking into the theater to watch Return of the King at midnight with my dad and my brother. But I just feel like now those sort of conversations feel like they're way more common. So do you think that some of those things are becoming more mainstream? And if so, how is that affecting maybe some of the culture and then the hunger for the material that you produce, which is something that, you know, that has a important positive message, but is presented in a medium that's sort of gaining ground?
So I think that it's becoming more mainstream, but I think the reason it's becoming mainstream is because the weird kids are adults now. And we're not going to make kids feel the same way we felt. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
in the sense that when I was in school, I would joke. I joke about how my teacher would assign me to read one book, and you do the whole thing where you lift up the book like you're reading the book, and there's actually another book like wedged inside the book. So it's like, because of course you get like this giant British literature book with all these short stories, this thick textbook, and of course you lift it up vertically and you can fit like a standard manga volume in there pretty I think that the kids that grew up doing that are teachers now. So when they see a kid holding Naruto or holding One Piece, they're like, you know, that has been out since before you were alive. Dive in, take it, like, enjoy it, right? And I also think that I think that the generation that is right now in their 20s and 30s kind of have this, we have this privilege to not have to grow out of things. It used to be where, you know, cartoons, comics, it happens and then you put it down and you go do something else. But there's so much in the comic medium that you really can't read or appreciate until you are an adult. I think that the medium itself has grown so much that there's a capability now for people at all different stages of life to be able to appreciate it and contribute to it and engage with fandom. You look at how much things like Comic-Con have grown. There are so many more opportunities now. And as a result, I think that mainstreaming has really just gotten rid of a lot of gates that have stopped people from being interested. Like, I know that a large stereotype in the comic community is that girls don't read comics. It's like, oh, primarily boys read comics. And what we're seeing now is that girls are reading comics at the same rate, if not more. If you look at the success of authors like Raina Telgemeier, who's one of my close mentors, one of the most supportive people I've ever met in the comics community, when things become more mainstream, a part of what happens is that a lot of those gates and a lot of those boundaries that were pushing people out are no longer there. So more communities are able to take part. And I think that's really great.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's good to know that girls are reading at a higher rate. So you came on, you know, when we first approached you to say, hey, we'd love for you to be a guest. What would you like to talk about? You chose the idea of storytelling and entrepreneurship. And so we always ask our guests to sort of boil down what their field is or what their topic is into three words. And so we were chatting before the show. I love your three words that kind of you selected to boil down. Could you share those with our listener?
So if I had to take entrepreneurship and storytelling and boil them down into three words, those words would be heroism, community, and power. I think those three words kind of at base level is how I describe those things.
Can you tell us a little bit more about why you chose those words? So storytelling involves heroism and heroes.
So I think that storytelling at its core is about having the confidence to share your experiences with the world. Mm. I think that every student, every young person is the hero of their own story. And while very often we consider storytelling as I'm going to go get my composition notebook and I'm going to write this long epic with amazing character development and bold new locations and things like that. I think that a student being able to look someone in the eye and answer the question, how are you doing today, is storytelling. I think a student being able to adequately express, here's how I feel and here's why, here's what I'm experiencing and here's how that's affecting me. Here's how I feel about this, and this is the reason that I feel the way that I do. I think that storytelling, and I think that framing that as something that's heroic is really important, because I think that for young people, especially what I say is that they live in a world that is constantly trying to tell them what to be. So the data that I'm quoting happened a couple of years, was recorded a couple of years ago. My gut feeling tells me that data usage or technology usage has increased since then. But the average American student engages with media content about 10 and a half hours a day. That's what the numbers were a couple of years ago. In addition to that, Stanford did a study where they work with students around digital literacy, and majority of the students that they work with did not demonstrate adequate digital citizenship skills. So they weren't able to properly tell fact from fiction when they were looking at things online. They weren't able to tell when something was an actual news article or a sponsored post that someone paid to put there. And I think that when you look at the data, it's very clear that students are being marketed to in covert and overt ways at all times. Even if you look at what's happening with TikTok, a lot of these TikTok trends or TikTok challenge videos are subconsciously telling students, here is what you're supposed to be. Here's how you're supposed to look. There are some that would say, and I'm one of those people, I guess, that for some students that are on TikTok right now, looking at what takes off or what goes viral and what gets clout, ages as young as 10 and 11 years old, they're subconsciously picking up the ways that they need to compartmentalize themselves for public consumption and to be accepted by the people that they want to be accepted by and to get that clout. And I think that to go against that grain and say, I am who I am, and not only am I confident in that, I'm going to tell you my story and I'm going to express who I am in the most sincere way that I can. I think that's heroic. And that's where the heroism piece falls in for me.
That's so important. And I think that this is something that as a society, we're still kind of reckoning with the effect that technology and social media are having on our sense of identity, the discourse that we have as a culture. The analogy I've been kind of fond of using lately is that our cognitive hardware and cultural software don't meet their system requirements to efficiently run modernlife.exe. We just don't really have the processing power to handle all the complex information that's being thrown at us. So really, we're kind of maladapted to function in the age that we live in. Like, if you look at the rate of technological change over the last few decades, it's astronomical. There's a graph that I like to show that it shows that once you kind of hit the Industrial Revolution and then the dot-com boom, it just goes straight up exponentially. And, you know, it's like our brains are still hardwired to help us survive saber-tooth tiger attacks, right? But we're on, so much of our lives are on these digital screens. So I just think that that leads to a lot of complications. It leads to a lot of oversimplifications too. And we end up kind of lost, not really sure where it is that we're going. I think that's a really powerful message, is being aware of the influence that these things are having on us, and maybe narrative as a rope that we can grab onto to kind of pull ourselves out of, you know, that those sort of like swirling world of images and suggestions to gain a sense of identity. So how do you use that idea of storytelling in your work to encourage students to pursue that authentic sense of self?
Well, at Weird Enough, we create a comic series called The Uncommons. And The Uncommons tells the story of a group of unlikely outsiders that have to save each other to save the world. I think that comics, manga, anime, these fantasy otherworldly stories were really important for me when it came to helping me develop a healthy sense of self and helping me envision the impact that I could have on the world. And I think that for us, through storytelling and The Uncommons, the idea is we can use comics as a way to help students imagine themselves in a place that's much further along than they are. We can use these stories of these characters that are overcoming insecurities, that are growing into themselves, to help students in a time when they're doing the same thing and dealing with the same insecurities.
I love that idea of having to help each other in order to help oneself. And that kind of ties in that concept of community. Because a lot of times when we think about, you know, the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell, it is sort of a singular thing. This one person embarks on this journey, and then they return to their community in order to impart their knowledge or wisdom. And it seems like you're maybe suggesting that the true power is when you bring that community with you. And everyone is on this sort of quest together to find that sense of meaning and self. So can you talk about the relationship between maybe story and community? Because we think of story as maybe being something that one person is telling or having, but maybe it seems like you're suggesting it's more collective.
Yeah, so that's what I think is amazing. I think that stories have the capacity to be singular and collective simultaneously. So as I walk through life and I live my life as Tony Weaver Jr., there's a story there. But there's also a story in what's happening right now where the three of us intersect to talk and have this conversation. There's a story that happens when a teacher picks this up and listens to it and engages with it, and it leads them to go do something in their classroom that impacts their students. Mm-hmm. The threads expand exponentially. And that's where all of the cool stuff happens. That's where the fun stuff happens. I think that it's less about the hero's journey and possessive, where it's this one hero and we're learning about this one thing that they did. But I challenge that it's the hero's journey, plural, where we have multiple heroes that are intersecting. Like when Avengers Endgame came out, all the advertising was like, the most ambitious crossover event in cinema history. And what made it so cool was the fact that, man, we got everybody here. Mm. Everybody's here. Cap is here. And Iron Man is here. And Thor is here. Hulk is here. Captain Marvel is here. Guardians of the Galaxy are here. Why is everyone here? Mm. Like, people got really excited to see, whoa, so what? Number one, what's going to happen when all of them are together? Mm. But also, if all of them are together, who are they fighting? Who's that? who are they taking down? What threat warrants all of them coming together? Mm. And I think that if we live our lives the right way, all of us have the ability to have this ambitious crossover story, right? Mm. Where for example, in The Uncommons, all five of our main characters come together in order to fight this oncoming evil. But what we find is that all of them have something in their past that they're running from or that they must reconcile in order to show up most efficiently to save the world. So when we say that they have to save each other to save the world, it's literally that. Like, there's an enemy in front of us, but I know that we can't combat that enemy as a team unless I talk to you and help you overcome this thing that you're dealing with. And maybe one of you can help me overcome this thing that I'm dealing with. If we're all able to help each other feel whole, then we're going to be able to cover a lot more ground. And I think that so often in stories and so often in media, it becomes about me, 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 me. here's this amazing protagonist and everybody else is really just a background character. But the stories that are most memorable for me are ones where the entire ensemble, where the entire ensemble is fleshed out, where they have motivations, where they have goals, and they all have something that they're moving towards. And I think that's life, when you're able to get people together in one space that are all moving towards the same thing and they're able to collaborate with each other. The outcome is nothing short of spectacular.
Yeah, it's reminded me of so many other past guests that we've had, just talking about storytelling and storytelling as part of getting to your authentic self. And so we're just hearing this sort of common thread throughout. And I'm just wondering if you have, this is just a genuine question that I have about, is there sort of like an age range or like when students sort of transition from reading about other characters to writing their own story or identifying with characters? I'm just thinking like in a teacher's brain, if I'm gonna sequence this out in like a series of lessons, like what's the kind of, I don't know if you've seen like a magic sort of number for when students start writing their own stories versus reading and sort of identifying with characters and things like that.
I feel like students start writing their own stories and then they read other stories that help inform theirs and make their personal stories richer. I mean, even when you think about it, when students start writing, like they learn the alphabet and then the first thing that you write is, my name Tony. I'm Tony. Like literally on the sheet for my name is Tony. And then you get the little sheet is like, my favorite color is purple. Like you start your story immediately. Then you go read another story about how a character deals with something or impacts something. Like, for example, you Aesop fable it and you go read the tortoise and the hare.
That's right. Don't be cocky.
And, right. Exactly. And in your head, you're like, I don't think I would have taken a nap during the race. I would have finished the race first. So in the back of your head, you're like, I would have finished the race first. I wouldn't have. Which is actually kind of funny about this story, because I think the moral is supposed to be like slow and steady wins the race. But in my head, I'm like, when you're ahead, don't take a nap. Like that's what I mean.
Strategically time your naps. Very important.
Across the finish line. That's great.
I think that's a really powerful notion, that stories are sort of how we make sense and make meaning of ourselves and the world. They are sort of the first tool that we have developed to sort of share ideas and information. There's this researcher and sociolinguist named James Paul Gee, and he sort of like formalized with a capital N this idea of narrative. And he says that is sort of when people are dealing with really complex stuff, they form these capital N narratives in their head about who am I, what is the world? And I think that, you know, the time that we're living in now, that can get hijacked really easily by the sort of messages that are put out onto the internet about, you know, who am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to believe? So can you talk a little bit about, it sounds like part of your goal with these stories is also to help students be, I guess, digitally literate, to understand the sort of levers that these corporations or you know, institutions are pulling to create those meanings. So can you talk about how you, as well as use story, you also help students navigate the complexity of sort of like the very, message conscious society we live in?
Yeah, I think that deep down, a lot of students don't recognize how powerful they are. I think that sometimes it can be really easy for them to not realize that. In The Uncommons, we have a character who has a little bit of a monologue, and he says, I know exactly how you feel. You're just minding your business one day, and suddenly people start talking to you like you're a greeting card. You can change the world. I believe in you. You can accomplish anything you put your mind to. When little do they know, I am doing my best just to get out of bed every morning. And I think that with kids, we get really broad and high level. The joke that I tell is that, like, my fifth grade graduation, everybody's like, you are the future. You are the future. You are the future. And then I get to middle school and they're like, shut up and sit down. Stop talking. Take your paper. Do your packet immediately. And I'm over here like, I thought I was the future. I don't, what's going on? And I think that with kids, we send them these high level messages of like, you can do anything, you can accomplish anything. And then we put them in academic settings where they're not able to live out those possibilities. And then they're thrust into social settings where I could do anything. I could change the world. Shut up, nerd. Okay. All right. that ship has sailed. Okay. Understood. I could do anything. I could change the world, but I put a lot of work into this and nobody's watching it. Whereas I can repost somebody else's meme and get more likes from reposting something that I didn't even make than I did something that I spent putting all my time into. So what does a young person do? They look for ways to signal their value. So if we're not giving them opportunities to organically build and cultivate their value based on their identity and who they are, then instead they look for ways to they look for ways to kind of pump themselves up. So I'm cool, but nobody thinks I'm cool. But if I get this Supreme fanny pack, as soon as you see the box logo, what you know is that I'm cool, because that's what this logo represents. That's what it means. I'm cool, and I know I'm cool, and you may not know me, but I need you to know that I'm cool because I'm TikTok famous, and I have 200,000 fans on TikTok, and like, you just met me, but I don't need you to validate me because I already have 200,000 people that do, so really, you need to fall in line and recognize that I'm cool, or else something's off with you. We make it very difficult for them to organically find these healthy senses of self, so they go grab it from any place that they can. And it used to be like, oh, I'm captain of the basketball team. I'm head cheerleader, like that stereotypical like jock structure. But now it's more about, oh, well, I'm an influencer. I have this many subscribers on YouTube. I run this fan account or this K-pop stan account, and look at how many views we get. They start reaching for all of these other things. And I think that through digital literacy, what I try to help students understand is that no, the power is in you, the power is there already. The only reason that any of these brands matter is because they matter to you. They spend millions of dollars to get you to estimate them with coolness so that they can charge $100 for a red fanny pack, right? Like I think that the model gets flipped sometimes, where students end up relying on these outside factors for their own sense of value, when in actuality, it's these brands that are relying on students for their value. But students don't see it that way. I don't think they recognize a lot of that power that they have. And we try to flip that dynamic and help them understand that.
I love that of flipping the dynamic. And can you talk a little bit more about that, about your third sort of concept that we pulled out was power. And you start, before we started recording, you talked about the power that students have and that teachers can harness it. Can you talk a little bit more about the power that students have and what ways you think teachers can harness it?
I think that students, young people have this unmatched combination of energy and audacity. Mm-hmm. It's like,
indeed.
you have the energy to do so many things, and you also have the audacity to actually do it. Is that really? Is that what we're doing? And mm-hmm. I think that even with distance learning, we've recognized that a little bit, right? I've loved all of the educator memes that I've seen about the crazy things that students have tried via distance learning. Mm-hmm. Like I saw one student that made a Zoom profile picture. Indeed. That was the Zoom window instead of reconnecting. So that's they right. could join the Zoom chat, but they didn't actually have to be there. It made it look like they had Wi-Fi issues. But the thing is, they misspelled the word reconnecting.
Yes.
So if you squint, you're like, you had the energy to go and come up with a way to skip class, mm-hmm. and the audacity to actually implement it as if I wouldn't notice, but you
didn't go to the dictionary.
Misspelled the word. Mm-hmm. I'd almost be proud if you had spelled the word properly. I think that taking advantage of the the ability that students have with technology, this unmatched level of zeal that they have. Like I saw where school got shut down and a group of kids went and rebuilt their school in Minecraft. Like from memory, a group of them rebuilt the whole school. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, guys, here's our server. We're just going to have graduation in Minecraft. And it's just like a whole classroom Minecraft just hanging out.
Yeah, I love it.
Just hanging out. And I'm like, who else would do that but a student? Mm. Who else would have that kind of that light bulb moment? And I think that a part of it is because they see the world for what it is, but they have the audacity to believe that it can be something more, that it can be something better. And I think that a lot of the time adults lose some of that tenacity. I think as life goes on, we kind of move towards, okay, what's secure and how do I establish myself in that? But while they still have that audacity, I think that there's a lot of power to make things happen. And I think that once we make them recognize the brand's not what's important, you're what's important. The minute you say that the world works this way, suddenly that's how the world works. Like even if you look at video games, prior to Fortnite, like what makes Fortnite so revolutionary is less of the gameplay of the actual game and more of what Fortnite did for the revenue model of video games. Because for the longest it was, we make the game and then you buy the game and I might have some DLC that's attached. And then Fortnite pops up and is like, yo, no, the game's free. You can have, but the game's free. Do what you want with the game. But if you want to do this cool dance, that's going to cost you. and it's young people that normalize, okay, cool. So I expect the game for free. I'm not going to pay you for the game, but I will pay you to dance in the game. Because that is amazing. I would like to be able to dance in the game. Mm-hmm. I would like to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that them having that understanding that it's their behaviors and their purchasing patterns and their beliefs and their values that are able to shift entire industries, I think once they get that, I think that students are able to do some really cool stuff. So for teachers, it's about teachers helping students understand the fact that they have that agency and the fact that they have that power, which gets a little tricky because you can't tell a student that they have agency and not afford them that agency in your own class. Yeah. So, yeah. You can't say you have I like the way that you think outside of the box, and the way that you think outside of the box is ultimately going to be able to change the world. So I'm going to give you assignments that allow you to leverage that and simultaneously say, we have assigned seating, sit here, phones away, do this packet, don't talk. They're not really congruent with each other, right? So, yeah. At that point, it becomes about, okay, well, which are you more concerned about? Do you want to maintain the status quo, or are you really here for allowing students to reach their fullest potential?
I think that's a challenging shift for a lot of educators because, you know, many teachers came up in this sort of paradigm where they were the gatekeeper to having access to knowledge, right? Maybe the student read some at home or they had conversations with their parents, but like I'm even thinking like before television, like the access that students had to other people's lived experiences, these other stories, was much more limited. Whereas now when students come into my classroom, I mean, like, as you were saying earlier, every social media post that they make, they're making conscious design decisions or to tell a story to their followers and maybe to themselves to some degree, who they are. So my students come into my class and I just have to sort of help them realize it as storytellers. And they also consume, I mean, they know the amount of Netflix that my students watch based on the conversations I have with them is insane. So a big part of our work is thinking about how we can be more intentional about honoring students' funds of knowledge, what they come into our classroom already knowing, and creating like intersections between that and sort of academic standards, because the way that we frame curriculum, it's not just I'm learning about World War II, I'm learning about something like the relationship between power, chaos, and order. All right, so you know, I'm like, I know that y'all know about Thanos's plan. He is trying to take power by creating a moment of chaos so he can then assert a new order. So my students are frequently like, dude, you've ruined movies and TV for me because now I'm just thinking about your stupid English class all the time. But the real idea is, I think that it's tricky for teachers because we have a lot of assumptions about what students know and don't know when they come into our classroom. And because students have such a wider access to media now. It seems like the skills that they have, the knowledge that they have, has just grown exponentially and really fast. And it's hard for teachers, I guess, to figure out how to do that. So do you have any suggestions about what teachers can do to honor the things that they know, honor the skills that they have, and incorporate them more into their instruction?
I'll express it in this way. And I say this from a place of appreciation because I consider myself an educator, but I'm not a teacher. And I know that there's nothing that's more annoying to teachers than somebody that's not a teacher saying, here's what teachers should do, because there are certain aspects of being a teacher that just aren't matched by any other profession. Mm-hmm. But what I can express is that for me, the teachers that have had the largest impact on me and the teachers that have helped me the most are the teachers that bring in the personal kind of properties that data can't. Students have access to information. This is true. You can get information from all over the place. You can go to Khan Academy. You can read things online. You can look at different articles. There are a bunch of databases that you can go grab. In an age where students have unprecedented access to information, teachers become even more important. Because I think that the teachers that have had the strongest impact on me are the teachers that are able to appeal to my humanity beyond what the data actually is. So this is World War II. It's a point in history. Here's the year where it happened. Here are the motivations behind it. Here are the people that are involved. Here's how many people died, and here's what countries took part. This is all data. It's information. It's there. I can go get that from anywhere. When I go sit in a classroom with a teacher that can take that data and contextualize it and say, here is how what happened then directly impacts what is happening today. Here are the patterns of how people were behaving back then that we can directly draw parallels to for how people are behaving today. I can go sit in the math class and you can teach me the formula and you can teach me how to solve these word problems. And I can go and look in the book and learn how to graph a polynomial function. And that's fun, I guess, for some people. But when a teacher sits me down and says, when you get out of school, you're going to have a life that you want to live. You're going to have a lifestyle that you need to be able to afford. And math is going to be the thing that enables you to do that. Being able to take those raw numbers and directly connect them to the goals that I have for myself and the outcomes that I would like to have for my life are the ways that my favorite teachers impacted me and kept me focused and kept me paying attention in a time when, in theory, I could go and watch a YouTube video and get the tutorial. I think that if we want students to stand in their power, we have to create clear examples that we can point to for what it looks like when a student does that and link those examples to the information that we're giving them. And I think that if we do that, it becomes less about, sure, you can get the data from anywhere. But when you come and you sit down in front of me, understand that what you're learning is something that's for you. I'm not just giving you data that you can go find anywhere. Your education is not me taking this one size fits all approach and shoving something in your ear. It's more about, here's what I think you as a person need to be successful in the journey that you're charting out for yourself. And as long as it resonates, I feel like students will be engaged.
I love that. I think that's so, you know, I just connected some dots. So a lot of our work with teachers is helping teachers help students sort of connect dots. And I made these connections of what you were talking about. So I am a super novice of a lot of the pop culture you guys were referencing in this podcast. You know, I know enough to get your jokes, but that's about it. However, I'm connecting these dots of student agency and student voice and student power, which is one of your key concepts, and concepts. So we talk about concepts when we shift to a conceptual approach to our teaching and learning. So World War II is not just stale and it's there and it has no impact to today, but we can link it to what students there what they already know. There, I call it prior knowledge. I think Trevor uses fountains of knowledge. Is that what you say, Trevor?
Funds of knowledge. Yeah, prior knowledge, funds of knowledge.
Funds of knowledge, but that's a way to use pop culture to connect. You guys know so much as students. from your experiences in pop culture, and we're going to connect that to the topics that we're talking about here. And what you just said, Tony, was about their future lives. So what are you bringing to the class? What do I need you to know about that you could go and find out anywhere? But how do we connect that to what your future life is going to be? I think you just gave me an idea for what I think Trevor and I are going to be exploring a little bit more in more detail as we continue our work. That's awesome. I love it.
And Tony, you practice what you preach. You took your love of graphic novels, of design, of storytelling, and you became an entrepreneur with it. So we've talked a lot about stories, and I'm definitely taking away a lot of wisdom nuggets. But could you talk about how you took these things that you are passionate about and you sort of created a business around it? Because I think that that's something else for students to consider, is this idea of, you know, once a teacher opens their eyes to the fact that they do have power and they can do these things. I think it's really good for them to have models and people that they can look to be like, here's someone who's done it. And not just like, you know, a Steve Jobs or a Bill Gates or someone like that, but someone who's like actually like more their age is creating content that they consume and understand. So could you talk a little bit about your journey to take your passions and your projects and become an entrepreneur with them?
So for me, I consider myself a social entrepreneur, and the core difference between an entrepreneur and a social entrepreneur is that an entrepreneur recognizes a market opportunity or a market gap and says, I'm going to create a product in order to satisfy that need because there's an opportunity for money to be made here, which is cool. Whereas a social entrepreneur, recognizes something about the world that is irreconcilable with the way that they think the world should be. And it's so irreconcilable that that person says, fine, I'll do it myself. and kind of steps into it. So when I was in school, I went to Elon University. I double majored in acting and strategic communications. And I had this idea while I was in school, I was going to be the next Michael B. Jordan or Denzel Washington, where essentially like my school was top 20 in the country for theater. I'm going to learn theater, but I'm going to double major in communications and learn about, I majored specifically in strategic communications, which is like PR marketing. I'm going to learn how to market myself. I can be my own publicist, tell my own story, get myself out there, kind of jump over a lot of these audition hoops that a lot of young actors have to deal with. And then perhaps I can find some success at a really early age. However, what I found was actually that it would be difficult for me to find success because there weren't a lot of roles for people that looked like me, because in media and in a lot of the content that we consume, it's not especially diverse. There aren't a lot of roles or opportunities for me. So then my thought process became, well, why don't I begin writing my own content and creating my own content? That way I can make the roles for myself. And that in itself kind of led to an entrepreneurship piece, because you got to get the money, you have to produce, you have to get a team together, you have to lead the team, you have to set expectations, you have to create a company culture. And this is all to make a series of 4-minute videos that I have something to put in my demo reel. Man, I'm just trying to beat Denzel. Come on. And then as I started working in my community more, I was volunteering at a local elementary school. I saw and engaging with a lot of students of color. And also when I was in school, I was a junior in 2014 when things started happening in Ferguson. I started looking around at media and this industry of entertainment that I wanted to be in, and directly recognizing, wow, this lack of diversity doesn't just make it hard for me to be the next Michael B. Jordan. What it also does is it makes it tangibly more difficult to live as a Black person. Mm-hmm. It makes it tangibly more difficult to live as a member of the LGBTQ community. Literally, the media representation, whether we're being misrepresented or underrepresented, is having a tangibly negative effect on the life outcomes for marginalized groups of people. And that was my moment where I saw something about the world that was irreconcilable with what I thought the world should be. And I said, well, somebody needs to do something about that. And obviously, if a lot of these larger organizations have a bunch of money, you are the industry players, you are the gatekeepers, and you're chill with it. obviously you're not going to do anything about it, not until it's financially viable anyway. So somebody has to go and chart that out and show you that it is financially viable for you to be a good person. Maybe the industry will make that or make that turnaround. So while I was in college, weird enough, our team at our largest, I was leading a team of like 20 people across five different kind of departments, focusing on different aspects of getting the business done. And then I graduated and I had to transition because we raised some funding right before I graduated, but it wasn't enough for me to bring a team of 20 people with me. So I really had to focus on, well, what is the way for us to create the impact that we want to have? And that's how a lot of our comic work started. That's how a lot of our educational work started. And I think that for me, entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship has always been about, how do I want to impact people? How do I want to impact the world? How do I want to impact my community? And how do I grab data in order to show what allows that to happen, and what's the most efficient way for that to take place? And that's always my mindset as an entrepreneur, as I create and as I step out into the world, trying to make it a little better.
Excellent. That's a nice segue to your TED Talk, because I watched that before we recorded the podcast. So about the need of diverse superheroes. Is that the name of the TED Talk? Why we need diverse superheroes?
I think it's why we need superheroes that look different.
Yeah. It's good. People should, our listeners should definitely check it out. Speaking of, where can we get your comics? Where can we get your services as an entrepreneur? Where can our listeners find out more?
So if you go to weirdenough.com, all of our information is there. There's an option for you to check out some of the comics. We have some print copies of the comic that'll be up on the site soon. And also it's there that you can sign up on our platform, Get Media Lit, and get access. We have a library of hundreds of lesson plans, activities rooted in literacy, digital citizenship, and social emotional learning.
I was just going to compliment you on weirdenough.com, and then you throw out Get Media Lit. I love it. That is awesome. I love it.
Telling stories with your URL. I dig it.
Have to.
That's amazing.
Well, all right. We really appreciate you coming and chatting with us today, Tony. That was an incredible conversation. I'm taking away a lot of great stuff about the relationship between power, community, and oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking on the third one.
Heroism.
And heroism. There we go. Yes. Fantastic. So we'd love to have you back on again. And we'd love to kind of create a community around this podcast so people can keep updating us on what they're doing. And we'd love to incorporate this kind of stuff into more classrooms. So we appreciate it.
Thank you all so much for your time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Conceptually Speaking. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and are coming away with a stronger grasp of the concepts and mental models that help us understand our world. If you like this podcast, feel free to like, comment, or subscribe on your favorite platform. If you want to learn more or get involved, check out our website at edtosavetheworld.com and join our Facebook group, Learning the Transverse.